This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Marketers, are you ready to make an impact with audio advertising? People are hungry for authentic connections in a world buzzing all around us. How do you cut through the noise and truly reach your audience? Visit stateofaudio.com to see Audacy's State of Audio, the Trends Report. Uncover the secrets to high-impact creative. Learn how AI is revolutionizing the industry. And get ahead of the curve on measurement and audience trends. Don't just stay in the game. Win it. Visit stateofaudio.com and download your free copy.
Thank you, Dave. It is 9:09, and we're going to spend some time talking about the death penalty. Governor Landry, back on February 10th, said he decided to end a 15-year pause on executions, and he said he wants them to use nitrogen gas execution. Nitrogen gas, I'll get it out, to perform the execution. And Len Davis had his sentence. He was convicted twice and sentenced to death for killing a witness, Kim Groves, in an NOPD situation. Antoinette Frank, we got a couple of things going on. That's what's distracting me. Is also on death row, but they say it's not quite time for her to be executed yet, and that's an encapsulation of that. But here's what I'm getting to. What got my attention about this is that Len Davis, the guy that was sentenced to death twice for having a witness killed against him, said he didn't want his death sentence overturned. He wanted the death sentence. And now that's working its way through the court. Meanwhile, the family of the victim, Kim Groves, said that they don't want him to be executed either. They want him to remain on death row. And that just kind of got my attention because it goes to the nature of punishment and it goes to the nature of, are we as a society better than that or not? And I'd like you to text me at 504-260-1870 and let me know where you stand on the death penalty. One of the first debates I ever did in high school was capital punishment. And at that time, and the research hasn't changed, as far as the deterrent goes, they used to hang pickpockets in London. And one of the big problems they had with public executions of pickpockets in London was pickpocketing going on at these executions. All right, so with that, we're joined by Sister Helen Prejean, Catholic religious sister, who hung up, but we'll get her back in a second. Those were the issues I was dealing with. Sister Prejean's known around the world for working against the death penalty. She's a Baton Rouge native. And let me finish my thought here, if I can. So when it comes to Len Davis wanting to be executed, when it comes to Kim Groves' family saying, no, they don't want him executed, they want him to live his life in prison, it goes to the nature of the punishment, right? And whether it's bloodlust or whether it's about punishing somebody that did the wrong thing. The way I look at it is, if in fact a guy like Len Davis or Antoinette Frank is going to hell, well, hell's not going anywhere and hell's going to be there. But if there's not anything after, and it's just the way my mind works in a linear way, well, then why would you just have mercy on a killer, on somebody that's committed the most atrocious acts? Why would you have mercy on them and put them to sleep as you would a dog or a cat that's suffering and, in essence, euthanize them? So when I got to thinking about that, in addition to Len Davis saying, no, kill me, please, put me to death, and the family of the victim saying, no, don't put him to death, let him live in prison, that added on to my, as I've grown older, opposition to the death penalty. That and the other thing is, when it comes to the practicality of it, when you look at the expense of it, it's far more expensive to execute somebody than it is to keep them, for people that are texting in saying, I don't want to pay for it, than it is to keep them on death row with the appeals and so forth. And the other side of that is, are you really, when it comes to it, you're killing a human being, and is that really what you want to do? With that, we welcome in, I believe, Sister Helen Prejean. How you doing, Sister?
Hey, good. I'm fine. I'm here at the ready.
It is an honor to talk to you, and I'm going to, it's hard to put people on the air, so I'm going to ask them to text in, and I'm going to ask you to answer their questions and respond to them as I take these texts, because I think
Sure. You're
one of the world's renowned experts on this. You missed what I was saying before, but to give you a quick recap, Sister, what I was saying is I used to be pro-death penalty, but as I've grown older, I've changed for a couple of different reasons. One of which is, if there is an afterlife and there is hell, then hell's going to be there whenever this person dies of natural causes. If there's not, well, then if you're looking at it from a strictly punishment standpoint, well, then what you're doing is euthanizing them and putting them to sleep as you would an ailing animal, which would be not a punishment but a merciful thing to do, which is on the opposite side of trying to punish somebody. Also, there's the instance of it costing a lot more to keep try to execute somebody and keep them on death row. And then, of course, there is the human element of it, that you are taking a life. So with all of that said, that's where I stand. I want to hear a little bit about you, because I have respected you for a long time, and it is an honor to talk to you. How did you get into this death penalty fight, and what is it that inspires you?
Yeah, well, I got into the death penalty fight because I came to understand that the gospel of Jesus and the call of the gospel to be a Christian was more than just about being charitable to people around me and saying my prayers as a good nun, but it was getting involved with poor and vulnerable people and working for justice. That led me to live in St. Thomas Projects in the 80s, and it was straight from there that one day I got an invitation. Hey, Sister Helen, you want to write to somebody on death row? I knew nothing about the death penalty or the criminal justice system. Wrote a letter to Pat Sonnier 2.5 years. I witnessed him being electrocuted to death. Came out, threw up, and it changed my life. And the whole thing, Tommy, has been to bring people close to the death penalty. In the abstract, everybody supports it. Get close to it. And you ask people, well, could you do it? Or you got to hire somebody to do it for you. And then people begin to go, I don't know if I could do it. See, how do you personalize this issue so that it's not just abstract?
What are the more common arguments that you hear from people that are for the death penalty? For example, I'm just going to address a couple of things, Sister, right off. There are people that are both pro-life when it comes to abortion, but pro-death penalty. That would seemingly be in contradiction to what Jesus, as I believe him to be, would want. Your thoughts on that?
And that was the heart of my dialogue with Pope John Paul II, because I said to him, Your Holiness, so many Catholics say they're pro-life, but when you talk to them, they're pro-innocent life. But when it comes to a guilty person, they draw a line and say, well, they deserve what they get. And I said, Holy Father, how can you write an encyclical about the inviolable dignity of life? Is it only the dignity of the innocent? But human beings have a dignity even. Everybody's worth more than the worst thing they've ever done in their life. You cannot philosophically, psychologically ever identify a human person in an action. Even at trials, prosecutors, as much as they would want to point to a defendant, say that person is evil, they cannot do that. They have to say the action is evil. And so, and then when you get close in this project, I mean, in the whole thing of people saying I'm pro-life, but I'm pro-death penalty, they're making a distinction. They got their own designer way of deciding who has dignity and who doesn't. And when you hear the rhetoric of politicians about people who've done crime and how evil they are, and they are demons, they are monsters, they're animals, and in fact, we can't even sentence them to life without parole because they're so evil they'll kill other inmates or guards. We have to kill them. And you look at that process, and what is it? It's the demonizing of human beings. It's the same thing you hear some politicians saying about immigrants. They're criminals, they're rapists. And once you demonize people, you can make the public scared. And when people have fear, then they tend to go, okay, yeah, we got to execute them. But we really don't. People are going to be just as safe if Chris Sepulveda and Jesse Hoffman continue to serve the rest of their sentences behind walls as it is for the state to kill them. And then we really do want to talk about this rush to executions of using nitrogen gas. We really do want to talk about what has precipitated this and why are we doing this.
What do you think's precipitated?
Well, it's definitely not been a public outcry. When you look at the practice of the death penalty, because I've been watching this a long time. In 1987, we executed eight people in eight weeks. It was a rush to executions. Everybody was scared of crime. Okay, yeah, we got to do this. And now you look at Louisiana over the past 20 years. The last execution we had was in 2010, and that was a person who gave up his appeals. The people don't want to do this, and if you look at it, juries give out death sentences less and less. We have prosecutors heading for the death penalty less and less. And there's so much that you have to look at in the climate of a state, the politics of it, the culture of it. Louisiana is an ex-slave state. We've always had the harshest penal punishment. Convict leasing came right out of slavery so they could have workers in the plantations. And we've all, because of our history, we've always had this deep history of harsh penal punishment. And the death penalty is the apex of that. Before, illegally, they used to lynch people. Now we have a so-called legal process. And per capita, Louisiana has more exonerations than any other state. We've had nine people and big mistakes. John Thompson, all these people kept on death row all these years. The man I'm accompanying right now on death row, he's the eighth one I've been with. Four out of the eight, I believe, are innocent. I believe he's innocent. His name is Manuel Ortiz, and I'm writing a book about him right now. We make mistakes. It's a very tricky process. And one of the things we're becoming clear about is the way the Supreme Court in the Gregg decision in 1976 set up the death penalty. You never get a death sentence unless you have a prosecutor that requires it and goes for it. They always have the choice not to seek death. And when they do, you look at the climate in which they do that, and you look at our own state here, and you look at the long history, it's always prosecutors, and politics is mixed up with it. They feel they're tough on crime, and that's what their constituents want, and they go for it. But just like you said, Tommy, it's a human life. And what I do in Dead Man Walking and what the film does too, and the opera of Dead Man Walking, is what they do is we just bring the people close. Okay, let's look at the crime. It's outrageous and horrific what that human being did to another human being. But the death penalty is about us. I mean, when else in the criminal justice system do we ever imitate the crime to punish the criminal? They killed, okay, so we got to kill them. And then to claim that you're helping the victim's family by doing that. I got to ask anybody listening to this. Somebody that you love is killed, and what the state is going to offer you is, and the average wait is 17 years from the trial, 17 years you're waiting. Grief is public. And we're going to allow you to sit on the front row and watch as we kill the one who killed your loved one. And the watching of that violence is going to give you peace and heal you. Can it? See, that's worth reflecting on. The more I find that people really reflect on the death penalty and get close to it and get away from this abstraction that you're killing a real human being. And in Dead Man Walking, I tell the story of Kendall Coody. He was one of the guards at Angola. I'm thinking of the guards now at Angola that are going to have to be assigned to this TAC team to take somebody and gas them, to suffocate them to death. I mean, I know the prison. I've been going there for over 30 years. And I know the mood on death row, and I see how the guards are relating to people. You get somebody in prison, and you got to relate to him as a human being. And Kendall Coody called me in his office. He had been the supervisor on death row, and I think he could have stayed there forever. But he had been pulled into the TAC team when there were executions, and his job wasn't even to strap people onto the gurney. It was to go to their cell after they had been killed and collect their toothbrush and their personal things to give to their family. And when I looked into his eyes, I knew he was a really troubled man, because he said, "Sister, I've been through five of these things. And I get back home and I just stay in my lazy board chair. I can't eat. I can't sleep. My wife knows not to talk to me. And in my gut, I know I helped to kill a defenseless person. And I can't do it anymore. And he's the only one I met in the system that retired because his conscience made him do
Sister,
that."
Sister, let me take a break. We'll be right back here. And let me just say this to the audience, those of you that are texting in about it makes no sense that it's cheaper to execute somebody than it is to keep them on death row. That is not true. Numerous studies have proven that to be just the opposite. Somebody texted in and said health and dental insurance. You don't get health and dental insurance when you're in prison. I don't know what that's about. So that's false. So we'll just dispute that, and you can educate yourselves and look that up.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Up, if you don't believe me, the easiest thing for me to do would be to sit here and say, fry them. But I do my own thinking. And to me, it flies in the face of what Jesus would want. As I perceive it, it flies in the face of what we as human beings should be. It's not, whether you like it or not, applied fairly. And once you do it, you can't take it back. It's one thing to let a guy out of jail or a woman out of jail 20 years later and say, "I'm sorry," or give him some financial compensation. It's another one once you execute him. At one point, I was firmly pro-death penalty, but I'm not anymore because it just doesn't work. And again, going back to the first debate I ever did way back when, they used to publicly hang pickpockets, and they had a hell of a problem with pickpocketing at those public executions. So it's not a deterrent. It doesn't work. I think it brings out the worst in us. But y'all are welcome to believe whatever you want and text me at 504-260-1870. I'll pass them along to Sister Helen Prejean when we come back, and she'll address your concerns. First question I have is, Sister, why are you soft on crime? I know she's not, but I know that's what some of you are thinking, and we'll talk about it when we come back. Tommy Tucker doing what I think's right. Back in a flash, WWL. 9:30 now, talking to Sister Helen Prejean. I think you know who she is, one of the leading advocates in the world against the death penalty. Governor Landry wants to start them up again in Louisiana. I used to be pro-death penalty then. And Sister, I'm going to tell you what, you talk about being close to it. After one time being mistakenly cuffed and stuffed in the back of a police cruiser over a mistaken identity thing, that only took 15 minutes to clean up. I realized not everybody in jail is guilty, which then led me to realize not everybody on death row is guilty either. And then from there, my thought process continued. If you want to talk to Sister Prejean, I'll take your calls at 504-260-1870, and she will too. But I'm going to tell you what, you got to be respectful. Okay, let me go to a couple of texts that come in, Sister, and it, repeatedly they say, what about the victims? Your thoughts?
Yeah, here's the real thing about victims. What heals a family after they've experienced a terrible, violent loss like this? First of all, you got to know that families are never always of one mind about the death penalty. There can be huge disagreements within the family. Some are for it and some aren't. And then they begin to wait. One time I was giving a talk in Cincinnati, Ohio still has a death penalty, in a church, and a woman got up and she said, my sister was murdered. The prosecutor's going for the death penalty. Our family's just trying to get a private place to grieve, but here's the media knocking at our door. And once they seek the death penalty, your life is public. And the claim that this is going to heal a victim's family, that what is needed is strict retribution. They had a loved one killed, and so now the state will kill the one who killed their loved one. And all that waiting in public and grieving in public and the media constantly knocking at their door. How can that heal anyone? You look at what does Louisiana actually do to help victims of violence heal, the families. The most they could get, and this is going to be years of process with the Victims Compensation Fund, it will be at the most $35,000. Imagine if the $13,600,000 we're paying extra to keep the death penalty in place here in Louisiana were poured into victims' families for counseling, family counseling, grief counseling, and help and healing, in comparison to taking one person and killing them and saying you're going to help the victim's family by letting them follow it. I mean, by letting them watch it. It doesn't make sense. And I think we're ready to move on. It was not a public outcry to start executions again. Look at that. We've gone down to a trickle of executions in Louisiana. The zeal for it and the fire for it isn't there anymore. We have a way to keep citizens safe without imitating murder.
Somebody texted in and said, does the sister devote equal time to the victim side of the equation? I don't quite understand what that means, but you do counsel victims and talk to them, I presume, Sister?
Yeah, but look at that mentality. If you're spending this time with death row inmates, you ought to be spending equal time with victims. No, I can't spend equal time with victims because I'm working to end the death penalty and help the American public understand that we need to stop killing our citizens and giving government that kind of power. But whenever I'm engaged directly with a man on death row, I always reach out to the victim's family.
One thing I will say, and the texts that are coming in saying pieces of garbage, this, that, animals, that, the other thing, if you've had any introductory sociology at all, you realize that when it comes to, not you, Sister, I'm talking to the audience here, but when it comes to war, et cetera, first thing you do is you dehumanize the enemy. And I guess, unfortunately, it's become that way in politics as well. You reduce them to, you know, there were words for the Japanese that I'm not going to really use because I shouldn't. There were words for the Germans that I'm not going to use. There are words for people of race that I'm not going to use because when you do that, what happens in your mind is they cease to be a human being and they become a blank or whatever the other thing is. And I think people need to realize that sometimes they're being manipulated that way. I'm getting repeated texts, Sister, here from the Bible, and I stopped talking about the Bible a long time ago because I call it Bible Hold'em, where it's kind of like you can play your Bible quote, and then I'll take my Bible quote and raise you one, and then you'll see me Leviticus, and then I'll raise you a Matthew. You understand what I'm saying? Address that if you will, please.
I do, Tommy.
Address that, please.
I do want to address the Bible because it's a huge thing, but I just want to get back to this thing of the animal, the monster,
yes,
and dehumanizing people. See, Jesus made it clear that redemption is always possible for human beings. And one of the wardens, I think it was John Whitley, told me, "Sister, you know who comes to this prison and by and large makes the best trustee? Are people who committed murder. Most people who do murder people, it's not a premeditated, long-range thing. They get in a bar fight or they got something in, and they got a gun and they kill somebody. And they get here in prison. Most of them change. And it's interesting. A poll was taken recently and showed that a lot of people in Louisiana still say they believe in the death penalty. But one thing that got them is they say, well, if they see that a person is changing or has a possibility of redemption, they're not sure they're for executing him. And that's for us to look at in humility as human beings. And Pope Francis has said this as well. Who are we to decide that God is finished with a person? A lot of people who go to prison and on death row experience horrific childhoods. They saw violence. They get in prison. They begin to read. They're doing work. They have a disciplined life, and they change. Who are we to say that people are so consummately evil that they can't change and we have to kill them? Look at the mentality behind that.
Sister, let me jump in for one second, if I may, because I know what people
just heard,
and it's not what you said, but what people just heard is, yeah, let's coddle them. That's not what you're saying at all. What you're saying is, let's not kill them, right?
Exactly. Look at the extreme language. If you say people can change and can be have redemption in their life, you call it coddling. Mm. Look at the extreme language. So you're not really having a debate at this point. It's an emotional, up in the ante on the debate.
Yep.
So, I mean, that's an emotional reaction because deep down you think these people deserve to die anyway. So watch how the language is used here. Redemption suddenly means coddling.
What really got my attention was when the family of Kim Groves said that they didn't want Len Davis executed. They wanted him to live in prison, and that goes to the punishment aspect of this. What would you say to people who say that you're being soft on crime, you're being soft on criminals, that these people need to be punished? Your thoughts?
Life in prison is a horrendous punishment. I mean, to be in prison and to be deprived of your free. I know a man in Angola who's been in Angola for 43 years. They're never going to let him out. And he suffers. You want to see people suffer? Is that what's behind why you want the harsh punishment? They made other people suffer. Now you want to make them suffer? Just look at your own thinking on that. Why do people desire that? Look, here's the main thing, is the role of prisons is to keep society safe and to restore life to people. They're not places of torture and pain and punishment to make people suffer. And we generally have that kind of attitude, I've noticed, with the warden and people who work in the prisons and Department of Corrections. They're looking for people to get a new chance at life and to change. That's what we want. We don't want to be just furthering the violence by imitating it. We want people to change. That was the warden telling me that the people who make the best trustees generally are people in for murder.
Let me take a break, sister. When we come back, we'll get back to the Bible here because I'm getting a lot of people that are playing Bible Hold'em. 9:39, we're talking to Sister Helen Prejean. You got comments, text them in, 504-260-1870. I'll pass them along. I seem to be getting a lot of texts from like five basic numbers. I would ask you, the audience, at 504-260-1870, if you believe in God, if you believe in hereafter, judgment, etc., or just right or wrong, would you be willing to pull the switch, flip the lever for the injection, or do whatever it takes to execute a prisoner on death row? Because if you wouldn't, I don't think it's right to ask somebody else to do your killing for you. And if you are willing to do that, then are you willing to face whatever you face when the time comes, did you pull a switch to kill this person? And then you say, yeah, I did. And then are you willing to deal with the consequences of that? I'm just asking you to think it through is all I'm saying. 940, 20 till 10, traffic now, WWL. 947, 13 till 10, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking with Sister Helen Prejean. I think y'all know who she is, one of the world's leading advocates against the death penalty. We looked for people that were in favor of the death penalty to come on and talk about it and give the other side, but I think, Sister, there are no real groups because they know there is no other side for this other than the emotional side that you've already addressed. Let me get to a couple of texts here real quick. Good morning, Tommy. I'm a Trump-supporting, gun-toting, he-man kind of guy, but I disagree with the death penalty. But for the grace of God or myself, none of my family members are on death row from the tragedy of killing somebody. Thank you for your show. Somebody else texted in and said, I've changed my opinion mostly for the reasons you mentioned and a lot from what the sister said. But it doesn't seem that it's better for the people of Louisiana to have execution. Somebody else texted in and said, just a hot button for my fellow Law and Order Republicans. Meanwhile, highest auto insurance in the nation, second highest per capita population at below federal poverty level. Louisiana sits at the bottom, healthcare, infrastructure, business growth, reading, etc. And I think they do make a point that it is a distraction. Sister, I wanted to ask you,
We can't let the Bible go.
Go ahead. Hey, get to the Bible, please, because okay. We're playing Bible Hold'em.
I just want to say any Bible Hold'em is perfect. It's weaponizing the Bible. And I just want to say to anybody who gets in this argument and starts quoting the Bible, I want to ask you, is the Bible something you really revere and meditate with and pray with? Or are you only going to reach for that Bible to try to get a quote? Because the Bible is very much a mixed bag about violence and what supposedly God wants. It's 2,000 years of religious experience of people where you didn't have prisons, where you had, I mean, even the one of an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, the history of that is to contain violence, because if somebody in one village went and did something to another person, they would go and kill the whole village. Only a life for a life. Only one life, not the whole village. All about containment. But the Bible is a mixed bag, and you can find Psalms that talk about dashing the children of the enemies on the rocks. And you also find, and that's the thrust in the life of Jesus, is to love one another, to forgive one another, to be community to each other, to care for each one as a brother and sister, to be there for the sick and the vulnerable and the hungry and the aliens. That's the thrust of compassion that's also in the Bible. So I just want to challenge anybody that's going to pull out that Bible to weaponize it and to do proof texting. I want to challenge you on that and ask if that's truly sincere or you're using it as a weapon.
Have you found in your years and years of doing this that once you can pierce that emotional level and get to the logical level, that people are more inclined to maybe give it a second thought?
Well, it's got to be both. We do have to deal with the emotions we feel. This is how the editor at Random House helped me when I wrote Dead Man Walking. Mm-hmm. In the beginning of the book, for a long time, I didn't deal with the crime and the emotion of the crime. I was all in the human rights of the one to be executed. And he said to me, he says, hell, nobody's going to read your book. You got to deal with the emotion and the outrage we feel, because that's moral to feel outrage when innocent people are killed. A mother carjacked with her children, or just an elderly couple killed in their home. We have to deal with that. But then we have to move to, and you're right about the logic, we got to think. And we got to get real information. So you're so outraged. How many people who kill other people actually are selected for the death penalty? And you see there's a pattern. Mm. You know, you said fair is fair about the paint. Well, and that's what we say about the death penalty. Oh, it's fair. Only poor people are selected for death. Overwhelmingly, over 75 people where they seek a death sentence is because a white person got killed.
Let me jump in for 1 second, and there's the saying that says, those with the capital don't get the punishment. Explain that, please.
That's exactly right. No. So you're poor, and you can't hire your own attorney, so you got to get a public defender appointed to you, overworked and underpaid. Some public defenders, we used to fund public defenders in Louisiana with traffic tickets. I mean, really. And they're underfunded and they're overworked, and they may have three capital cases, which take thousands of hours. And so here's the rhetoric. Oh, yeah, they deserve it. Yeah, it's all fair. And then you see the difference that poverty makes. Every single person you're going to find on death row is poor. You know why? Because if people have money, they get a crackerjack attorney, and the DA will think 50 times before they're going to take on somebody that's going to really put up a big defense, and they might go public seeking the death penalty and lose. That's why you never find rich people on death row. It's always poor people. And then you look and you quoted some of the misery statistics here in Louisiana. We have one of the highest poverty levels. You know, our children can't read. We need help in education. We need early, you know, poor children education. And we're deficient in all of those things. If you want to be tough on crime, you got to get justice in your community for all the people. Because people who have a good life, who are educated, who have a job, they're not going to be thinking of doing crimes. Who does crimes? Desperate people are people that can't, I mean, they resort to breaking the law to get money. I watch kids in St. Thomas resort to selling drugs because they got a minimum paying job and they were still in poverty. We got to think of the social fabric of our society. And see, it's real easy for a politician to say, instant solution, we'll just kill the really, really bad guys. That's no solution at all.
Sister, if you wanted to leave somebody with a thought for the people that are texting in with, and again, it's not that many people. I think the audience in a lot of ways is more introspective than that. But for those that are texting in with, you know, fry them this, that, the other thing, how would you suggest they even open their mind to begin a different way of thinking?
Well, I'm going to tell you the truth. I've spent my time, and my editor told me this. If people are so impervious that they're just fed by just blazing emotion on this, they're kind of impervious to your saying anything to them. Mm-hmm. You want to be able to spend most of your time, and this is what your book is for, people capable of thinking about this and moving to another level. So anybody out there ranting, kill them, fry them, I don't know that I have anything to say to you. I don't think you can hear what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. I'm talking to the rest of the people out there that can think about this and maybe reflect on it. And that's the evolving standards of decency of a society. That's what we're about. And that's who I'm really talking to.
Thank you, sister. I appreciate your time. Been an honor talking to you, Sister Helen Prejean, who we all know who she is. And look, let me just say this. I'm not soft when it comes to crime. I'm just kind of think of things in a linear way, in a logical way, in a legal way. And it just makes no sense. The death penalty makes no sense in any way, shape, or form. Plus, I find it hard to believe that Jesus would actually stand there and press the lethal injection button. Can you? Or flip the switch or drop the pellet in the gas chamber. Can you really imagine Jesus as you know him doing that if you believe in Jesus? And a longtime politician told me a long time ago, and I say this because I know some of you are upset at what you heard the last hour, that sometimes people will see the way the crowd is running, get in front and call themselves a leader. That's not really the way to live your life. I feel strongly about this. I presented my views. I read your text. That's it. I got to look at myself in the mirror every day. 9:55, back in a flash, WWL.